Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Lewis. When it comes to winter, a thriving garden may not be the first thing that comes to mind. With seasonal shifts, colder temperatures, and serious cloud coverage, what plant could possibly survive? Well, our research says that lettuce has a fighting chance. Not the answer you were looking for? Well, you're in luck, because today our favorite gardening guru, Jim Orban, joins us to answer your toughest gardening questions and help you and your garden successfully transition into the winter season. Let's talk about it after this news from NPR. Minutes past the hour. We're just going to listen to that all noon.
Please?
Can we?
We can.
Because I'm telling you, we're kind of rocking out to that.
Are we not?
They know how the way to our hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face that.
Amen.
As a fact.
What a great lead-in that was.
I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Hannah's working hard. And
there you go. Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you so much. There we go. Hey, it's the gardening
so
edition.
So tune it up again.
Yeah, Victor. Come on. Get that down. Hey, you know what I just discovered? Literally, in the between last night and today. I don't know if you're a football fan, but apparently the Washington Redskins, well, I know that, the Washington Redskins and the Dallas Cowboys are playing in a big football matchup tomorrow afternoon.
It's true.
So Victor is leaving at 12:45 today to get ready for, no, I'm just kidding. He'll be here straight through till 1 o'clock.
And we'll see if he smiles at this, but aren't they big rivals?
I believe that they are.
Yeah, they're big. Yeah.
And Victor is, what do you think? Which team do you think he roots for?
I'm thinking Skins.
Nay.
Cowboys.
No, man, your mic is getting messed up for the next hour. That's it.
Feed him static.
Audio and video people can totally play with you. So
no telling what I'm really saying,
that's
huh?
That's right. Might have the helium filter on right now. You never know.
Well, speaking of who's playing together this Saturday.
We? Which has nothing to do with gardening, but
Virginia
that's okay.
Virginia Tech and UVA for the Commonwealth
Cup.
Can't even.
I know. Hey, let me just say something nice about Virginia Tech today, because one of my great privileges is to direct the Civic Leadership Institute.
It sure is.
Last week, we honored the fantastic John Lawson of W.M. Jordan Company.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Who has been so meaningful to Virginia Tech.
Oh, very much so,
very
yes.
Very meaningful. And he, and this is what I love, see, it's a friendly rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
Because the late philanthropist and all-around magnificent man, Josh Darden, is a big old UVA guy. So Josh and John Lawson told this story at this big awards thing last week, which was beautiful, and more than 500 people there. And John told the story of that Josh had called him one day and said, I need you to be on the Board of Regents, Board of Visitors at Tech, and I know it's very dear to you, and that was just one of many, many, many things that John Lawson has done for Virginia Tech.
And continues to do.
Continues mm-hmm. to do, including underwriting the School of Construction there. I mean, he has been so meaningful to that place. So I kind of like that story. Because
it's
a friendly rivalry in which, the rising tide lifts all boats. It has nothing to do with football.
There you go. What a nice quote.
I'm telling you. But, yeah, so that was a lovely thing. And I was like doing these kinds of taking advantage of these opportunities to lift up before us people who are doing great things.
Mm-hmm.
Great things. So thank you, John Lawson. And I will have to forgive you for, no, I'm just kidding.
Speaking of all the people being lifted up,
how
about President Obama with his honor of his Medal of Honor?
Yeah.
With all those individuals. That was just
amazing.
Yes, it is.
And I think today, is he pardoning the turkey today? I think that's happening or has happened. So, yes, indeed. Medal of Freedom. There you go. We're at 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Victor, I have a personal message for you from my Custer, that's a cousin sister, Melody, who said, you're about to get a whooping tomorrow. I'm just going to put that out there for you. So there it is.
Go Cowboys.
I'm telling you. 11 minutes past the hour, 440.
Hey, I have sound back, don't I?
You're lucky he make you go out in the hall and yell through the door.
Really?
That's what you're lucky about.
Or get on the phone. Feed him static.
We're at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. This is your day to call in with your garden questions or your football commentary. We are happy for that as well. And whatever, you know, whatever. And Jim Orban and I were talking actually right before we went on the air. He's been in the market for a new to him car, or maybe a new car. I don't know. Is it new or new to you?
New.
New car. Mm-hmm. And,
you know, that's end of the years.
I know. And based on your observations, I think you could be a successor to Click or Clack.
Wouldn't that be something, huh?
Great. Uh-huh. See, so I'm saying you are a multi-talented person, not just the gardening, but now the cars.
I'm not real sure that I would be, that my information would be exactly right on if you get into a water pump.
I see.
Or battery.
Yeah.
But this is the way Jim Orban took care of it.
Got it. But the auto negotiation process.
Oh, that process.
You are
torturing. Yeah.
Some sales
It's a torturous process.
Right it is.
It's a
it
torturous
is.
Process.
We're at 12 minutes past the hour. It's 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. We were talking about plants that you should be planting right now. Apparently, lettuce among them.
Lettuce is a great one. All of our cool weather plants are great. And when we say planting them now, we're not talking about seeds. We're primarily talking about transplants. So at your local nurseries, spinach, Swiss chard, lettuce, all of the different kinds of lettuce, you know, the just good old leaf lettuce versus the butternut types of lettuces based on the multicolored leaf lettuces. There's just all kinds of lettuces, Swiss chard, spinach, but then also the broccoli, the cauliflower, the Brussels sprouts.
Yum.
All of these essentially cool season vegetables.
Yeah.
November, a little late to put them in, but go ahead and do it. I ended up buying some last December, put them in, and I had a great spring crop of spinach. Yes.
Wow.
I wasn't expecting to harvest anything in January, February, but I put, and we've talked about this before, a Rime cloth over top of it, which is a spun woven fabric type of a cloth, which somewhat insulates it, protects it. It doesn't need
a lot
of insulation.
You get this at the garden center too?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It doesn't, by no means are you trying to create 70 degree temperatures in and close to the plant, but what you're trying to do is just keep the crown of the plant living so that
keep the worst of the frost off.
Exactly. Yeah. So that by the time your March comes along, these plants are going to be giving you a wonderful harvest.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just ask you one question?
Do
you enjoy the eating of the thing that is known as Swiss chard?
I do, especially.
How do you do that?
Especially if it's cooked the right way.
Yeah, well,
I don't eat Swiss chard fresh.
Okay.
You know, just cut up.
Yeah, because that is really you just use it for roofing material fresh. I'm telling you, I think these garden centers could have a whole separate line of business if they'd go into the roofing business with Swiss chard.
Well, you know, Swiss chard has a very ornamental aspect to it. There's one called Bright Lights,
mm-hmm.
and it has very neon colored stems. With a Swiss chard, it's got a little bit of leaf and a long stem.
Exactly.
And that stem has, if you will, neon colors. It's got reds, yellows, just really pretty colors through there. And so it does. Now that one is not, that's an ornamental Swiss chard. So therefore it's not one of your best tasting ones, but the others, if they're cooked the right way, Swiss chard's a pretty good.
I'm going to take your word for
you
that.
You don't want to boil it to death. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the chef.
Yeah.
To tell
I understand
you,
that. Well, you could do that show too. You know, and we get a cooking show. A
we'd
root,
be hungry.
Auto show, a gardening
We'd be
show.
Really hungry if I did a cooking show.
15 minutes past the hour. Hey, by the way, if you're heading out of town or into town, whichever, you noted that the traffic was backed up to Granby Street trying to get from the south side to the peninsula.
Correct.
We should also note that coming the other way, there was a situation at mile marker 258 in Newport News. There was a vehicle fire. They had temporarily closed all the lanes. Wow.
Wow.
But good news, at 11:45, they did reopen those lanes, and the diversion's been lifted. So it's probably going to be congested for a bit of time, but at least it's all reopened. And I'm sorry for those of you who had to get diverted and go to Fort Eustis Boulevard and Warwick and all the rest of it. But it looks like that's been lifted, and so things should be getting back to whatever passes for normal on the day before Thanksgiving.
Right, right.
Fred's on the line from Roanoke Rapids. Thanks for calling, Fred.
Good afternoon. How are you today?
All right, very well.
I had three questions. I had two to start, but two questions and a comment. Swiss chard, I'm from Canada originally.
Okay.
And Swiss chard is one of the best greens you can steam.
Really?
Vinegar and salt added after.
Mm-hmm.
It's comparable to collard greens down here. My
really?
Wife has never heard of it.
All right, I'm going to try that.
Never heard of it. And secondly, I have an asparagus bed and a raspberry bed.
Ooh.
Now, my wife tells me that the asparagus has to turn brown before I can cut it down for the winter. And we've already had two frosts, and it's already 4.5 feet tall and gone through seed. Can I safely cut it down and weed below it? And do you recommend burning it, the stems? And also my raspberries, they're a fall-bearing raspberry. They didn't bear very good this year. But how do I trim them back or just let them sit?
Okay. We'll do the asparagus first. On the asparagus, yes, we've gone past the first frost already. So anytime you want to go ahead and cut those, it would be fine. What I would recommend you do is have a sharp knife, sharp shears, and make your pruning cuts above the soil line. Go ahead and do whatever necessary weeding that you have, and then use a pine needle mulch around the plants once you've cleaned the bed out. Pine needles, because they allow water to move through them so nicely, and what that's going to do is it's going to keep your crown dry so that you don't get any winter rots on your crown. As far as the raspberries go, raspberries is some special pruning with that. They're what we call biennial bearer, meaning that they bear a vegetative cane the first year, and then they flower on that vegetative cane the second year. So everything that had raspberries on it this past year, that cane will turn brown, kind of a straw-colored look, and you would prune that out, and the other cane will have fruit production on it in 2017.
Okay? How's that sound, Fred?
Do I fertilize now? We keep several rabbits just to use for fertilizer, not the rabbits themselves, but their droppings.
Thank you for clarifying.
Right, right. No, I would not. I would not do that. First of all, if you're using rabbit manure as a fertilizer, let it compost very well first, because it's a pretty rich fertilizer. And if you use it, if you want to use the term raw, you'll probably get more foliage production out of that raspberry than you want. So let it decompose somewhat, and then use it in a mix with some straw or some pine needles or something else around the base of it in the spring of the year. Do not use it now. It'd be a waste of that fertilizer.
All right, Fred, thank you for the call. Really appreciate it. We're at 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. James on the line now from Newport News. Hi, James. You're on the air.
Hi, Kathy. Thank you. Wonderful show. I listen
thank
all
you.
The time.
Thank you very much.
So I'll just give you a quick background. This is not an edible garden question.
Okay.
Right. It's a planted tree. In a pot, about 5 cubic feet of soil. And my cat of 18 years, I had placed in the pot and planted the tree there about a year ago. It was past October. And it's a coral maple. And originally the bark was very bright coral color, and now it's kind of a darker brown. And it had some newer growth that I've been cutting back in order to keep the tree small. And my question was, is there anything that I should add to the soil, or should I get like a soil, should I get the soil analyzed in order to see if the decomposition of my cat is affecting the tree?
You know, as whenever you have something in a containerized plant, in a container, period. That soil does need to be renewed, either by taking sections of the soil out on an annual basis or by lightly scratching into the soil surface some composted material, compost or other composted material. As it relates to getting a soil test, probably wouldn't be a true soil test. And most of the times when you're doing a soil test, you're just getting pH of the soil, and most likely yours is somewhat stabilized at this point, being in a container. So the main thing I would recommend, James, is that this coming spring of the year, specifically March, April timeframe, renovate the soil with an organic material, just scratched into the first 1 or 2 inches of the soil, or divide that pot, that container, into 4 sections and remove 2 pieces of the pie, putting new plant, new soil medium in those 2 sections of that pie. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're sure. So welcome. Take care. 22 minutes past past the hour. I'm all choked up. 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Andrea is on the line from Williamsburg. Hi, Andrea. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you guys today?
Fine, thanks. Go right ahead.
So feeling nostalgic, making pumpkin pies today, and thinking of my grandmother. She's going to have to be selling her home soon. Aww. And has beautiful rose bushes that have been at the house for at least 60 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I tried taking some little cuttings and planting them here, and I may not have babied them enough, but it didn't work. I'm wondering about actually transplanting them. She has small and some really big bushy ones.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a big trailing one, too. But
okay.
Yeah.
Do you know their names?
Gorgeous.
Do you know the rose names?
I don't.
That would be even better.
I know. They've been there so long.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's an excellent time to move roses. Period. Excellent time to remove them. When you do move them, and you have multiple kinds, it sounds like, hybrid teas, floribundas, ramblers, all that kind of stuff. So if you're going to be moving a hybrid tea or a floribunda or one of the, or even, you know, an heirloom type of rose, you want to try and get as much of the root system as you can. Obviously, weight is going to be a limiting factor, but you want to go at least 18 inches away from the stem of the plant, make a complete circle around that plant. Try to get as much of that root as you possibly can. Most of the roots are in the top portion of the soil. There's going to be 2 or 3 anchoring roots in there somewhere that you're going to have to sever. But as long as you've got those other roots, the fibrous roots, those are going to be good. And then you probably want to cut back the top of those roses to somewhere 18 to 24 inches from the ground, 18 to 24 inches, realizing that next year it's going to take a while to get them re-stimulated, but this is good. And then you plant them at the same depth that they were growing in your grandmother's property, okay? And then for the rambler, you're going to have to cut that one really hard, realizing that you're going to sacrifice the 2017 bloom for that rose. But you, again, want to get as much of the root system as you possibly can and put it into a prepared bed, something that you've used composted material, whatever you'd like to use, however you like to incorporate organic material into that soil.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
And great time to do
it,
though.
That's a great time to do it. 24 mm-hmm. minutes past the hour. Let's go to Anita on the line from Moyock. Hi, Anita. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi. I have a sweet potato vine question. I was cleaning out my large containers, and I noticed there looks like a sweet potato in the soil. Huh. Now, can you eat that?
I don't know that answer. I don't want to know that answer. Usually when I do ornamental materials, I don't ever eat parts of my ornamental material. So to know that I could eat that or not, maybe somebody might call in and let us know that you can eat a marguerite sweet potato. But if you want to save that for next year, you want to harvest it and leave it intact. Don't cut on it. Don't segment it. Don't do any of those kinds of things. And put it into a baking pan, something where you're going to put it into a party room where you're just going to let it dry out. Sometimes you can add a fungicide to it, something like a Daconil, sprinkle Daconil on it, so that in fact it does not get any rots on it. But that way you can save it for next year's production.
All right, Anita, thanks for the call. Let's go to Amy. Amy on the line from Gloucester. Hi, Amy, you're on the air.
Hi, Kathy. Hi. I just had a quick comment based on the young lady who was talking about trying to transplant
yes.
her grandmother's rose bushes. My grandma, let's see, about 14 years ago, my grandmother sold her house, and actually it was after she passed away. We had to sell her house, and she had four beautiful rose bushes that I remember watering as a kid and picking roses for my mom with my grandpa and bringing them back in, so a lot of really special memories. I had those transplanted from North Carolina up to my home in Gloucester. Three of the four survived, including her very favorite one that was an antique light pink, baby pink rose bush.
Mm-hmm.
And every year when it blooms, it feels like visiting with her again. So I think it's an awesome idea.
Hey, Amy, thank
and
you
it
for
works,
the call. That's
especially
lovely.
At this time, Amy.
Yeah.
The transplanting time is, strike when the...
Yeah,
when it's hot,
exactly
now is the time
so.
To do that. You bet.
Amy, great call. And
yeah.
what a lovely
mm-hmm.
way. You know, we know this happens. You know, at some mm-hmm. point somebody has to move out of a house that's been treasured and loved. And transplanting is a great way to take that little piece
that
of that memory with you.
You bet. Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Jim on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Kathy.
Hi.
You mentioned the White House turkey.
I did.
Well, you being a Marshall grad and a UVA parent
yes.
may not be privy to some information that I'd like to share with
Please
you.
Please do.
This year's White House turkey, after being pardoned, will take up residence for the rest of his life at Virginia Tech.
I
and
heard that.
The rest
in
of his
fact,
life, huh?
it's not just the White House turkey, but the alternate White House turkey, who I suppose is like the Joe Biden, the vice turkey, I suppose. They're both going to be at Virginia Tech, and in fact, will be entertaining visitors Friday and Saturday. So if you happen to
really?
Go to the ball game, you can go see the actual White House
oh,
turkey and
wow.
his sidekick.
So that's pretty cool.
It will truly give the name gobblers to us, huh?
There we
How about
go.
That?
Nice. Hey, Jim, I appreciate it. And that is a great,
yeah.
great point.
The
so
last,
there you go.
The last one's residing at Virginia Tech. How about
okay.
that?
Okay. And it's Tater and Tot, apparently. Are there, I swear, I'm not lying to you. That is not right, Jim. That's not a joke. That's actually their names.
Yes. Well, we're the Hokies now, but yes, we were
okay.
the Fighting Gobblers when
okay.
I was in school, and
All
probably
right.
when Jim was in school.
That's when
Fair
I was.
Enough.
That's right. That's why I used the word gobbler.
There we go.
Because we were the Fighting Gobblers. Yep.
Hey, Jim, thanks for the call. That's a great piece of information, and I really appreciate it. Have a good holiday.
There you go.
Take care. Bye-bye. Yeah, Tater and Tot are the names of the 2016
oh,
National
that,
Thanksgiving
huh?
turkeys.
Mm.
Tater and Tot. So there you go. Let's go to Joanne on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Joanne. You're on the air.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
I'm so happy to get on your program to
well,
ask this
you.
Question. I have a question about cutting back rosemary, number one,
okay.
when, and number two, how. And
okay.
the how is because I have let it get way too big.
All right.
Some parts of it are 5 or 6 feet high.
Wow.
And you can imagine how far out it goes. I have gone back and cut back some, but when it gets this big, the inner parts have no green on it.
Mm.
Correct.
My question is, should I cut it back severely? Should I only cut it back so far? Should I start all over? I don't want to get away, rid of it completely because part of it serves as kind of a hedge between two areas.
Sure. Joanne, while I'm answering this, hunt up a piece of paper and a pen because I'm going to give you my email because I've got a great article on this from Fine Gardening, and it's in a PDF format, and I'll email that to you, and it's a great article. But rosemary, lavender, sage, all of those larger herbs are called sub-shrubs, especially when they get to the age like your rosemary is. It's called a SUB and then shrub, sub-shrub. So you have already indicated and found out, Joanne, that when you prune it or as it grows, it starts defoliating down at the base. And if you prune back to that location, it will not break bud for you. So you have to actually find green to prune this back to. It's almost like pruning a needled evergreen. The timing to do this is not in the early spring like we do most everything, February, March. You want to wait till it starts growing, and then you start pruning it. So all during the growing season, April, May, June, July, you can prune it, but not before then. So my email is jorband@vt. Virginia Tech, saying that a lot today, aren't we?
You are.
.edu.
A little bit worried about it.
.edu. vt.edu. And send me an email that says you need this information on rosemary, and I'll send this article to you, and it's a great read, and it will just reinforce what I just finished saying.
All right. Okay? Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. We're
good
at half past the hour. Full lines, because that's how we roll.
How about that?
You know how it is.
And it's just November.
I know. Can you believe it?
Uh-huh.
Let's go to Uni on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Uni. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Go Cowboys. Go Lions. And a quick question. I have
There are so many of them.
Geraniums.
Okay.
The rose geraniums. Do I have to pull them out or can I leave them in? I don't know the answer to that.
Well,
they have grown so much.
If you have the true geranium, you know, most of what a lot of people have are pelargoniums, which is the red and white and pink flowered plant that grows in baskets and containers and stuff. But there is a geranium out there, common name called cranesbill. But there's a geranium out there that is, hardy to our area. So, and yes, you can leave it out there. So it would just be a matter of you being able to truly identify that as a hardy geranium. And yes, you can leave it out during the wintertime. You bet.
It is
hardy to the area.
All right, Uni. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Jim Orband, our guest today, you probably already figured that out. 440-2665. 1-800-940-2240. We have had full lines for the entire show, but we do have one tiny line available for you right now. Let's go to Ashley on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi, Ashley. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you today?
Fine, thanks. Go right ahead.
I have a question about Brussels sprouts. I put the seeds down as directed by the package. I put them down around September. And so now I have a very thin stalk. It has very nice foliage on it, but no sprouts.
No sprouts have formed at this point?
No.
Okay. Because Brussels sprouts probably, we're going to start getting really cold. So if they don't have the sprouts forming on them, I'm wondering if you're going to be able to make that season or to go ahead and protect them with this remake cloth that I was talking about. And protect them over the January, February time frame, and maybe they'll form the actual bud for you in the spring of the year, and that might have to work for you. Might have started, you said September. Most of us start them back in July, so that by the time August comes along, we can set out our new transplants, and usually they'll have enough time to form that bud. That's essentially what you're doing, is eating a preformed bud. So maybe protect them over the wintertime so that in the spring you can get your Brussels sprouts to form. Okay?
Hey, thanks for the call, Ashley.
Good
appreciate
luck,
it.
Ashley.
27 minutes before the hour, and I tell you, you can join us. These lines are filling up, but here we go. Just give us a call, 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Are the numbers where you can join us today. Julian's on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi, Julian. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. Hi. Good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
We have a live oak tree in the backyard here. And by the way, this question is really nothing to do with the Thanksgiving theme, but I've been waiting for the opportunity to ask you this question.
No worries.
But we have this live oak, and in the last few weeks, it started exuding this very sappy, sticky substance, and I looked this up, and it's possibly something to do with a parasite that the tree might have become infected with, and I just wondered what you if there's anything we can do about this.
Okay, great question.
There's so many things that do attack. You did say it was a live oak, but there's so many things that do attack our tree species. And being the fact that you have a live oak, you know, it could be a scale that's on the leaf causing an ooze to fall, kind of a honeydew material. Where is this ooze coming from? Are you still on, Jillian? Can you tell us? Is it coming from the bark of the plant, the main trunk of the tree, or is it coming from the foliage?
It's dripping off the from the, I believe, from the leaves or from the branches, and maybe from the acorns. I don't really know, to be honest. All I know is that we've got this. A lot of drips at below the tree, which are very sticky.
And it's tough to do a diagnosis like this. When it's coming from leaves like this, it might just simply be a good old insect that is doing some sucking sap, and it exudes this material. My recommendation to you, you're in Virginia Beach, would be to take a sample of that that branch. Cut a good size piece of it, you know, something like 5-6 feet of that stem, if you can spare that much, and bring it to the extension office in Virginia Beach and let them diagnose what it might be. If, in fact, you don't want to do that, there are professional arborists out there, Knuckles Tree Service, Bartlett Tree Service, all those kinds of people can help you with that diagnosis. And the phone number for Virginia Beach would be calling 385-4769. And Andrea Davis is that extension agent there if you need to talk to somebody.
All right. Thank you for the call, Julian. I appreciate it. 24 minutes before the hour. Bob's on the line from Virginia Beach. He has a hurricane-damaged tree. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hi. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Bob.
Oh, to you as well.
I've got a tree. It's a maple. Not a particularly fine species, but in any event, during Hurricane Matthew, one of the largest branches of the tree is probably about 40 feet, 45 feet tall, split in half. So part of the branch is still, the biggest branch is still up there at the top, but fully half of it had broken away from it. I'm wondering whether I need to cut back beneath where the split occurred or have the tree trimmed way back to kind of deal with this issue now that sort of it's been prematurely topped.
I'm wondering, when you say it's split, if you hold your forefinger up and your index finger, is it right there where the V is, and you actually see a split section there?
Right. It's like half the branch peeled away from main branch.
Yeah.
There's still part of it. It's the part that's left is still weakened and compromised.
Yeah. That part needs to be pruned off of there. Yes. Uh-huh. That, you know, some people would try to get a big bolt and fasten the two together, but there is so much damage that has occurred there that rot is the concern that I would have for you. And trying to keep it from rotting. And, of course, now we don't recommend to use any pruning paints and such like that, but you do need to get it so that you have clean cuts on all portions of that stem. Again, like the previous caller, I would tell you have a professional come take a look at it. A lot of times they'll come and give you a free advice for it. Call either Bartlett Tree Services and ask for Jason Heiser, or Tim Knuckles with Knuckle Tree Service.
All right. Thanks for the call. And, you know, we should note, people are still dealing with the damage from the hurricane.
Oh, yes.
So, in fact, I think just today, a couple of more cities in Hampton Roads were extended in terms of some funding around that.
Well, especially when you're talking like a tree that he has.
Sure.
It's not an immediate thing that damage has happened already, but you still have to fix it so that within 10 years from now, that heals and seals properly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great point. Tom's on the line. Is it Tom on the line from Norfolk? Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
I have an ornamental cherry that I just noticed in the fall that normally you don't prune it back till after it blooms, but the two branches are rubbing together to the point where it's taking off bark. And they're both pretty big branches.
Mm-hmm.
I can prune that away now.
In the terms of pruning, you remove the dead, diseased, and damaged wood at any time of the season. And okay. when you have wood like that, that's falls under the category of damaged. So yes, you would most of the time select the weaker of those two branches to remove it. Yes.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay. And by the way, we now really have two lines available, and we have not for the entire show. 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240 are the numbers where you can join us today to talk with Jim Orband. We're talking about the winter garden we have established. There are some cold-loving vegetables you can plant right now. Lettuces, certainly. Other great fall plants, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, Swiss chard, turnip greens, cabbages, sweet peas, bok choy, Asian mustards, all those kinds of things. Great in the fall and winter.
Mm-hmm.
Nick's on the line from Chesapeake. Hi, Nick. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. How are you doing?
Hi.
Back to the same pruning question. I have a nice hedgerow of wax myrtle behind my house there, but it's getting too big. Can I prune that back, and will it fold back up again to be a nice hedgerow, or will I kill it? And what can I do with it?
Okay. The timing for the wax myrtle is a February prune. Okay, February prune, January, February. I wouldn't push it too much into March. If you've noticed on your wax myrtle, and I don't know how tall yours have gotten or how leggy they have, but a lot of times what will happen is they grow from terminal ends, meaning that you'll end up sometimes getting large trunks that are 1 inch, 2 inches in diameter. So sometimes it's better to cut down below where those originate from the main stem so that you have smaller branches that end up forming your new wax myrtle, and then you're just going to have to keep after it on a yearly basis to make sure that it doesn't get leggy again. So wait until February for the prune, and then when you do prune, try to remove those larger stems so that you can force smaller stems to become your new structure.
Thanks for the call, Nick. I appreciate it. Benjamin Boyette, we've had a lot of calls about this, is on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Benjamin. You're on the air.
Hey, Kathy, how are you?
Hi, fine. Go right ahead.
All right. Well, I have a cypress pine that has decided to drop all its needles and is now bare and looks quite dead. It happened over the summer. It sits right on a property line between me and the neighbor, so we've had some dispute over what to do about who does what. However, my concern is in the event that we are inactive on doing anything, at what point do I need to be concerned about brittle branches falling or the tree really being in danger?
Benjamin, how tall is the tree now?
It's a solid 50, 60 feet.
Oh, so any of the branches would be the side lateral branches that come off.
Correct.
Again, I assume it's a bald cypress. So therefore,
yeah,
those branches have resins in them that can last for a long period of time. So you might lose the smaller 1-inch, 2-inch size branches, but the large main structure of the lateral branches is probably going to be in there for a long time. I'm hoping that you guys can make your decisions by then. But I don't. The other thing is just to stay clear of it so that folks don't go up and under it. But, you know, you can't predict Mother Nature when dead material is just going to fall out of a tree. You just don't want to be in that target zone.
Yeah.
For an extended period of time.
Benjamin, does that do it for you?
Yeah, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
So much.
Take care. Happy Thanksgiving. We're at 17 minutes before the hour. Carolyn's on the line from Chesapeake. Carolyn, are you Carolyn or Caroline?
It's Caroline.
Caroline, thank you. I always like to ask that because people are very particular about that. Caroline,
yeah,
you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was just driving down for Thanksgiving and found y'all station.
Oh,
and,
wonderful.
I am a student. I'm about to graduate with a degree in horticulture, and I just wanted to make a comment to any listeners in case they're really interested in season extension, that cold frames are a really, really awesome way to extend season with cold, hardy plants down here. I didn't know if you guys had any
comments
to say about
this. We have not talked about that. Now, Caroline, you said you're about to graduate. Is that correct?
Yep, in the spring.
And so, where are you going to be working? Do you know yet?
I am studying sustainable agriculture, so I might eventually start my own business venture, but I'd like to just travel around to different farms for now and
nice.
Really like doing so.
Sure. All right, Caroline, thank you. So cold frames.
Sure. Cold
frames. What are
we
talking about? Describe it first.
Well, to describe a cold frame.
Yeah.
You can make your own, and there are plenty of plans out there that I have seen on internet and places such as that. Cooperative Extension has cold frame. There's an entire publication series just
got
on
it.
Cold frames through Virginia Cooperative Extension. Just go to ext.vt.edu and put cold frames and hotbeds in there, and you'll get
it's basically built low to the ground. It's used to protect. It's a sort of a built thing to protect the plants from adverse weather, and it has a roof on
it's
it.
A mini greenhouse.
Yeah, there
it's
we go.
It's low to the ground.
That's a much better way to describe
it. And it has glass, polyethylene, some kind of clear material so that light can still, because you're still growing these plants, you're just protecting them from the drastic changes. And in fact, sometimes folks get really creative and get old sleeping bags, moving blankets. And when we get those nights in January where it's dropping down to 7 degrees, they put those blankets over top of them to give even further insulation to it. Sometimes even putting pine needles in there. Pine needles are absorbing heat during the daytime. And at night, what they're doing is protecting and insulating the plant during the evening.
So you're a big fan of...
Have used them all of the time, yes. Gardeners extend the seasons when we shouldn't be.
Hey, Caroline, good luck to you, and thank you for the call today. Really appreciate it. Ed's on the line from Portsmouth. Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to give some instructions to the woman who'd like to save her geraniums
from
1 year to the next. I've been successful in taking them out of the pot, shaking all of the dirt off of them, placing them in a cardboard box upside down, covering the box, placing it in my basement, and just leaving it until the spring. Then there's still a lot of good live stem, and I just prune off the bits of stem that have gotten mushy and rotted and replant them, and they bloom every year to year. And it's worked successfully for me for several years.
And those geraniums he's talking about are the ones I mentioned earlier, pelargoniums,
right?
Which are not a true geranium, but that's what we call them, geraniums. Usually we find them in garden centers called zonal geraniums or seeded geraniums. But I was thinking that the Uni, if that's how you say her name right, was talking about more of the native.
Yes.
Hardy geranium. But Ed, that was a great explanation. I know that I've saved geraniums from year to year by doing that technique. That's an excellent technique.
All
thanks
right,
for
Ed.
Sharing that.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Jessica's on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Jessica. You're on the air.
Hi, great. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I bought a new home and it has very little landscaping except for a couple of azalea bushes. And I'd like to start planning for landscaping in the spring, and I'd like to use native plants and kind of have a pollinator, bird-friendly yard. And I was just curious if there's anything that I should be doing now to prepare for that, and if you have any resources that I could use for how to identify these kinds of plants that I'd like to use.
Sure. Now, there's all kinds of reading about this stuff, Jessica, as it relates especially to sustainability, natives, that kind of stuff. If I'm getting it right, I hope, I think it's called NPS, NativePlantSociety.org, is the organization where you can get a lot of the suggestions of plant materials. I'm looking at one of their publications right now. It's called Habitat at Home. And again, Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries is one of the cooperators there, but it talks about a lot of different native plants in there. So a lot of reading is what you'll be doing now. I would tell you about a month ago, you probably could have been doing a lot of purchasing of plant material, but pretty much a lot of nurseries are selling a Christmas tree and Christmas related kinds of things now. And I don't know that you're going to find a lot of discounted plant materials. Usually butterfly weed is found in 75% reduction areas at this time of the year. That's from experience. So you can find a lot of stuff reduced at this time of the year.
All right.
But the reading is probably what you want, and getting your ideas of how you want the landscape to be kicking in.
Thanks for the call. We're at 11 minutes before the hour, and you actually 10, so you just have a couple of minutes left to chat with our resident gardening guru, Jim Orband. And, you know, our coworker Lisa Godley over in these parts, and some of us are still left in the station today. I think Lisa is one of them. She wants to know where you can find herbs today, like thyme and sage. I actually saw some in the little plants. I think I saw it at the Harris Teeter, but would that where else mm-hmm. could you find herbs and like thyme and
sage rosemary
in the garden center? Parsley, sage,
that.
Rosemary.
Yeah, I think somebody sang that song.
That's it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those are herbs, the ones that are grown in grocery stores, so that you can buy your cilantro or your basil or whatever herb you want. You can just buy it at a grocery store for that matter, but make sure that you give it plenty of sunlight when you bring it in. And a lot of times just on your kitchen windowsill, unless you get a lot of sun all day long on that kitchen windowsill, is probably not enough. You're going to need to make some kind of auxiliary location where you can get the sunlight to hit it. And remember, these herbs are cold hardy in our area. I mean, I'm growing rosemary, sage, not parsley, but thyme, all those guys in my garden, and they make it through the winter time also. But garden centers are going to be selling them, but you're going to have to ask for them because they're going to be more focused on their Christmas products more than they are those other products. Okay.
Let's go to Florence on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi, Florence. You're on the air.
I meant to say football, Jim, since I'm a Charlottesville native. But what with that last lady about the native plants, I want to know when I have native wisteria and when should I pick the seeds to save, because we're going to move, and I'd like to have somebody to give the seeds to for the native wisteria that's wonderful and doesn't get out of bounds. And mm-hmm. I also have the Hartz, bursting, I think it's a
Euonymus.
Yeah, uh-huh. That's a native.
Euonymus americana.
I think when a lot is sold, it would be cut down.
Okay. Let's find out what Jim says about
the
that.
The seeds are viable right now, both on the wisteria as well as the Hartz bursting. Those seeds are viable right now. In fact, I'd be surprised if the Hartz bursting is even still on the plant. It has probably fallen to the ground by now. But if you can still find them on the plant, then you could probably pick it right off of the plant. Hartz bursting is a native euonymus that is usually found in our woods, and it's got a really neat berry that it is actually sent off. It was actually exploded off of the plant so that it can spread throughout.
Okay. Florence, thanks for the call. Francie's on the line from Norfolk. I think she's going to wrap it up for us today. Hi, Francie, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks.
Hi, go right ahead.
So, around our house, we have lots of pretty shrubs, but these shrubs all require tons of mulching to keep, you know, the weeds down and keep everything looking tidy. Do you have any recommendations for us as we sort of move away from this constant mulch that we have to do? Any other ideas for how we can do our landscaping and get away from the mulch?
Well, we know that the mulch serves a couple purposes horticulturally. One is it moderates the soil's temperature, and the other is it keeps moisture close in that vicinity of the plant. The rest of it is pretty much human desires, i.e. the keeping the weeds down and things such as that. There is I'm trying to think of the name, Planting in a Post-Wild Landscape. That's the name of a title of a book by Claudia West.
Keep me up at night.
Claudia West and Tom, I can't remember his last name, but it's called Planting in a Post-Wild Landscape. And what they are advocating is that we don't have all this mulch in area. Rather, we put plants in that area. It's ground covers, shrubs, and primarily native materials. So rather than having all of your whatever plant you have, your hollies in the foreground, you might fill the area that's full of mulch now with something like a carex, something like liriope, something like mondo, to fill that area so that you don't have to mulch it. Because your point's well taken. A lot of us are wearing out and getting all this mulch is very laborious and expensive.
Laborious?
Uh-huh.
Is
well,
it?
I said okay. I was going to throw one at you,
you
today.
You did. You know, it's a very big podcast.
It was going to happen somewhere in this broadcast,
indeed.
Right?
And we only have 6 minutes left,
and
so you
since
needed
we
to
did it.
Get that, work that in there.
But anyway.
Hey, Francie, thank you for the call.
So it's called Planting in a Post-Wild Landscape by Claudia West and Tom.
I'm going to wait for the audiobook on that.
It's good. I can bring it in for your light
please
read.
Do. Yeah.
Let me just add something to the comment from Jessica, who wants to learn some things.
Yes.
You know, there's the Virginia Flower and Garden Show, which is going to be held in either January or February this year. That is a great opportunity because they have educational classes where she might attend something at that class to talk about her wanting to plant native plants in her landscaping, because that subject is being discussed all of the time now.
Oh, fantastic.
So that's something that she can look forward to. And I think at the next Garden Hearsay, we'll probably have some tickets like we usually do in December. You bet.
You're killing me.
Looking forward to it.
Jim Orband, Fred Baker also sent us a message on Facebook about how to keep a plum tree and a fig tree alive over the winter. And we have 30 seconds left for your answer.
Both of them are very...
very hardy?
Hardy in this area. So a lot of folks, I mean, the fig tree that I have out in my back garden hasn't been hit in better than 30 years.
Let it go, Elsa.
Temperatures.
That's how we say in frozen.
And the trick about the plum is that's more of a summer kind of problem where there's a lot of diseases and insects.
And when would the
one.
Fruit begin to be able to be harvested there?
On the fruit? On the fig?
On the fig or the plum.
Usually the fig more like late August, September. Yeah. The plum, good July.
Wow.
July.
All right. Fred, you got a yummy summer coming for you.
right.
Fred, thanks for the post on our Facebook page. I appreciate it. Jim Orban, thank you so much for being with us
always
today.
Always a pleasure.
And may
you
I
bet.
Wish you a
happy,
very happy Thanksgiving.
And to you also.
And, also
to everybody back there. Yeah. You know, even that cowboy fan back there.
You there bet. You go. That's bet. Very generous of you in the season of Thanksgiving. By the way, coming up right here on 89.5, it's Radio
go
Lab.
Go Hokies.
Coming up tonight on WHR TV 15 at 8 and 9. It's a special on Pearl Harbor, the final story. It's about the USS Oklahoma, which was the only battleship to capsize during the Pearl Harbor attack. And then the second hour, they'll be looking at the USS Arizona. So that'll be interesting for you coming up tonight at 8 and 9 on WHRO TV 15. Now, tomorrow, Lynn Rosetto Casper will be here. And by here, I mean on your radio. At 11 o'clock with Turkey Confidential, and she's going to be for 2 hours answering your questions about what to do about your turkey, because some of you are just having problems with
she
that.
Won't be talking to about Tater and Tot, will she?
She will not be talking about Tater and Tot, who will by that point probably have been pardoned and on their way to watch the UVA Virginia game, would be my guess. I mean UVA Virginia, UVA Tech game. You know, that would be my guess anyway. Tomorrow night on WHRO TV 15, tomorrow afternoon at noon on WHRO TV 15, it is an international military spectacular. The good folks at the Virginia Arts Festival, along with WHRO, are presenting a 1-hour special celebrating the nation's military. And so that's coming up tomorrow at noon on WHRO TV 15. Then at 8 o'clock tomorrow night, it's Anne of Green Gables, which is lovely. And then at 9 o'clock on Friday, it's Lang Lang's New York Rhapsody live from the Lincoln Center, part of the PBS Art Festival. So lots of good TV for you to watch if your political conversation gets a little dicey over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, which it may. Thank you so very much for being with us today. I wish you a very, very happy Thanksgiving. We will be out tomorrow because our good friend Lynn Rosetto Casper will be here. It's good of her to work on Thanksgiving so we don't have to. Hope you enjoy that UVA Tech game. Hope you enjoy the Cowboys and Redskins. It'll be a big day tomorrow. Hope you enjoy your family and your friends. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you right back here on Monday.